off that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest tonight. And our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, who we've had on many, many times before, talking on medical issues. But Dr. Blaylock had told me that he had recently had an opportunity to read a book on the Jacobins, written by Abbe Barrel. Now, that may not mean very much to many of our listeners, but this is a book that was written, well, over 200 years ago by a priest. I assume he was a monk of some sort. He was an abbe, anyway, in the Catholic Church. And it was about the organization that was involved with the French Revolution. And the French Revolution was brought about by the Jacobins, which were a branch of the Illuminati. And most Americans, if you've been trained, gone to school in the United States, are never going to hear about this secret society, because there's been an organized effort to keep this secret. I know I graduated from the University of California in history. I thought I really knew an awful lot about what had happened and why the French Revolution came about, and the wicked king and how he was oppressing the people, and that's why they rose up and stormed the Bastille. And what a revelation it was when I really began to read books that had been written many years ago and finding that most of what I'd been taught about history just wasn't true, and that there really have been secret societies out there. In fact, some of these secret societies even came to America and were behind the Whiskey Rebellion here back in the time of George Washington. But most Americans are totally unaware of this part of the history. And so when Russell said that he'd read this book, I asked him if he'd come on and talk about it, because if we don't understand history, we can't understand what's going on today. And as George Santayana said, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it, and I feel that we are repeating it over and over again. Dr. Blaylock, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, why don't you just tell us how you happened to come across Abbe Barrel's book and how you happened to read it and what you learned. I'm just going to be quiet and let you talk.
Well, I accidentally came upon it. I was originally reading another book on the Illuminati. I was researching some material to find out more about the Illuminati. I read Nesta Webster's book on secret societies and her book on the French Revolution, which I think is the best history of the French Revolution in print. But she made reference to this book in her book on the French Revolution and in the secret societies. And so I found out that it was available, and I ordered it. Well, it's a very thick book. It's actually four volumes that were combined. It's almost 1,000 pages. He published it toward the end of the French Revolution, in 1799. Actually, the first printing was 1797 to 1798. And then it was printed in Munich shortly after that, 1 year after that. It didn't appear in France until 1818, 2 years before his death. But I found this the book was rather daunting, and it sat on my bookshelf for a good while before I read it. But I had a month off. I went on a vacation and relaxed, and I just spent a month reading it. And it's one of the most fascinating books I've read in this whole area, because he actually examined the documents that were in the possession of the Bavarian police, which were the documents confiscated from Adam Westhoff, the founder of the Order of the Illuminati.
Well, you hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock. And well, why don't you pick up the story there? Certainly, it's an amazing story of how the Bavarian police actually got those documents.
Well, it was a series of raids. Adam Westhoff was, from what I understand, he was in his carriage and he had the papers with him. The Bavarian police had gotten word of the Order of the Illuminati and that it was trying to overthrow the monarchies and was a danger, unpatriotic organization. So they captured him and they captured one of his chief lieutenants and invaded this castle where the Illuminati primarily had their headquarters, and they found this whole stash of documents, which the Bavarian police confiscated, and then they made it available to scholars and people who wanted to read it. So Abbe Borel actually sat down and read through every one of these documents, which is thousands of pages. He's a very careful historian, so he makes a point that everything is carefully referenced. He invites people to go to the Bavarian police headquarters and read it for themselves if there's any question. And as you read his book, you see he's quite meticulous about his authenticity. He divides the work into four main sections. One is the anti-Christian conspiracy. The second is the anti-monarchical conspiracy. Third is the anti-social conspiracy. And the fourth part is what he calls the historical part, which he goes through a lot of history. But all of it is historical. Now, in the anti-Christian conspiracy section of the book, which is a really great concern because Adam Westhoff, who was a professor of canon law at Ingolstadt University in Germany, he was obsessed with destroying Christianity, absolutely hated Christianity from A to Z. And so he dedicated his life to destroying Christianity, and the second thing he hated was the monarchy. He wanted to destroy all civil government, all civil laws. He wanted to destroy all private property and create his own dictatorship, which he never really told his adepts until he reached the higher order. So in the anti-Christian conspiracy, Borel takes it back before Adam Westhoff and the foundation of the Illuminati. He goes back to the period of Voltaire, and he said there were four main leaders of the anti-Christian conspiracy. At the head was Voltaire. Then D'Alembert was one of his disciples, who was also a professor. And Frederick II, King of Prussia, and Diderot, who was one of the leaders in the French Revolution.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Russ Blaylock, and we're talking about the whole idea of the Illuminati. And the Illuminati was not an imaginary organization. It was very real. And it was dedicated to the overthrow of the existing social order. But it was also dedicated to the overthrow of Christianity. And Dr. Blaylock is saying basically there were four conspiracies. One was against the monarchy. One was against Christianity. One was against the social order. And the fourth was of course, to bring about this government that Weishaupt would eventually come to be the dictator of the world. So pick up the story there, Russell.
Well, at that point, he's going back before Weishaupt, and he's talking about Voltaire. Voltaire, of course, was a very famous philosopher. The dukes and princes and kings all were using Voltaire, and they were entertained by him. They thought he's one of the great minds of the world. So he had a lot of protection, even though he spoke out against the Catholic Church, which at the time was very powerful. But they pretty much couldn't touch him because of his relationship with the royalty. Now, his chief lieutenant, of course, is D'Alembert, who was the illegitimate son of a nun, actually. And he was a lot more crafty than Voltaire. Voltaire was outspoken in his philosophy. D'Alembert said that his philosophy was that we need to do this through a series of gradualist moves. We destroy Christianity from the inside, we sabotage it, and we do it in a very careful, meticulous way. So he was much more careful. Now, Voltaire, he had a hatred of Christianity as well. And he would sign all of his correspondence with the following words. He'd say, "Crush the wretch." Well, the wretch was Jesus Christ. And he made this reference in every one of his correspondence. And he said that, "I am weary of hearing people repeat that 12 men have been sufficient to establish Christianity. and I will prove that one may suffice to overthrow it. And then he went on to say, could not five or six men of talent and who rightly understood each other succeed after the example of 12 scoundrels who have already succeeded? He's talking about, of course, the 12 apostles. So Voltaire, even which was going to be later copied by Adam Westhoff, he had the idea of all his correspondence with his adepts. He would use these names, these code names. For instance, D'Alembert's name was Protagoras, and his name was Bertrand. He also insisted on secrecy, so that when they told they had their meetings and they were discussing the true revolt against Christianity, it was all to be kept very secret. And he called it, he said, the monster religion must fall, pierced by 100 invisible hands. Yes, it will fall beneath 1,000 repeated blows. And he importantly said, and this is one of his famous quotes, when you strike, conceal your hand. This was, of course, going to be one of the principal methodologies used by Adam Westhoff in the Illuminati. He was a disciple of these early anti-Christians and anti-monarchists. Now, D'Alembert played a big part in the Encyclopedia, which at the time was a compilation, supposedly, of all knowledge in the modern world, which was in the 1700s. But he saw the Encyclopedia as a way to sneak in this new philosophy which would destroy Christianity, and he said it would be a better way of destroying the wretch, again referring to Jesus as the wretch, because of its gradualism and its subtlety. Now, what they used in this artful use of references, he said, what we do in the Encyclopedia, we'll even have priests write sections of it, and we'll write things that are very favorable to the Gospels, and we'll be very pious when we discuss these things. But then we'll give a reference for the reader to look up to read more, and our references will be all anti-Christian books and books that are promoting secularism. And we see a lot of this today in the modern world. So that was one of his ways of gradually introducing this anti-Christian philosophy into the world. D'Alembert referred to this as enlightenment by degrees. Now, the main protector of Adam Westhoff later was, of course, Frederick II, who was also an anti-Christian, but publicly he would speak very favorably and be very pious himself. Now, one time Voltaire was asked, well, what do we do about the bishops? And he said, leave them alone. He said, what we'll do is we'll fire up the public with the fanaticism for a secular world and the destruction of Christianity, and the bishops will fall by themselves and be of no significance. Now, all of this was 25 years before the French Revolution and 12 years before the founding of the Illuminati by Adam Westhoff. Now, to show how they infiltrated French society, particularly the scholarly areas, the French Academy was considered the epitome of the scholars' area of collecting their wisdom. And so if you were admitted to the French Academy, that meant that you were one of the great scholars of all times. Well, Voltaire was admitted because he knew all of the princes and dukes and kings, so they admittedly, very readily let him in the French Academy. D'Alembert was admitted because he never publicly attacked Christianity. He only did it through these subterfuges. Then he gradually would influence the committee so that his more radical friends could be admitted, for instance, like Diderot or Chamfort, who were violent anti-Christians and atheists, and Condorcet, who was, of course, one of the great atheists of the French Revolution and one of the very violent revolutionaries, was admitted by this subterfuge. Well, pretty soon, the French Academy was dominated by members of the Voltaire anti-Christian movement. And so it shows how in society you can gradually infiltrate these influential areas and take over them. Now, Voltaire also emphasized that one of the really important things is to recruit writers. He said, writing has a great influence on people. He was one of the great propagandists. And he encouraged pamphlets, writing of romances, histories, poetry, all geared toward this idea of instilling in the public this anti-Christian message. Later, we'll see Adam Westhoff brought this to fruition and made a science out of it. Voltaire also was one of the first to say that one of the ways we can destroy Christianity is through humor. We'll ridicule it. And, of course, look in the modern world today, in Hollywood and the comedians, humor and ridiculing Christianity is one of their favorite pastimes. So we see a lot of these things beginning to build. We see Helvetius attacking morality and telling people that, you know, you need to turn to the early Greek writers for your morality, not through some transcended idea of Christian faith. They attack marriage. They told that married couples are not necessary, that people can live together. All the things we think are modern were being discussed at this time. For instance, he said, the law which condemns them to live together becomes barbarous and cruel on the day they cease to love each other. Now, this sounds like the sort of nonsense we hear today attacking marriage and marriage between a man and woman. There were early discussions of what later was to be scientific evolution. For instance, Diderot wrote that he sees no difference between a man and a dog except the way they dress. Well, that's the idea of modern science, is that we're all animals. There's no real difference between man and apes and alligators except for this evolutionary force. So these early ideas were put into force through the power of science.
Now, you're really talking a period about, what, about 1760, somewhere in there?
Right. And the influence of Voltaire and his group of revolutionaries, anti-Christian revolutionaries, were spreading all over Europe. It was in France and Germany and Prussia and Italy. Even Catherine the Great was one of his secret adepts. She regularly corresponded and met with D'Alembert. So that's how Russia began to move in this direction as well. And it's interesting, Borel notes, he says, in the attacks on Christianity, he said that the religious apologist requires a serious and attentive reading and desire for truth, but depravity requires none. In other words, it's easy to attack something because you don't really have to defend your attack. You just make this blasphemous, terrible statement, and then the religious person has to spend hours or days or books and volumes trying to defend himself and defend his belief. And they knew that. That was much easier on their side. They also propose, rather than trying to assault the churches from the outside, to infiltrate the churches and destroy them from the inside. And they saw as their greatest weapon in this regard was the scandalous priest. They knew that every so often a priest was caught doing something really terrible, some sexual scandal or stealing money or some sort of thing. And so if they could catch him and point this out to the people, that was a great weapon. We see today that that's a tremendous weapon in the attack of Christianity in modern times.
Because actually here, what they've really done is infiltrated the seminaries, both the Catholic and the Protestant, where, of course, in the Catholic seminaries, they actually encouraged homosexuality, and we had carried for a time a book called Goodbye, Good Men. And in some Catholic seminaries, why, you were told if you weren't homosexual, you couldn't stay there. But, of course, the whole idea was to corrupt the priesthood and then, of course, let the parishioners know how corrupt the priesthood was, and you undermine faith in the Catholic faith. And similar things have happened in the Protestant religion as well. Well, Russell, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, and they were saying that these scandalous priests also open up religion to damning satire. Then you could make buffoons out of the priesthood, and buffoonery then extended to Christianity itself. And, of course, that's what we're seeing again today, is that you see these sitcoms and you see the movies that show priests as buffoons and idiots and liars and cheaters, and you know, everybody gets a big laugh out of it. But it's this slow, gradual erosion and chipping away at Christianity and the principles of Christian belief. It's also interesting to note that Burrell recognized there was this new order rising inside of this group called the Economists. And, of course, we had to realize in the 1700s, 1750 or 60, we didn't know the word economist. There was no such word. Well, the economists basically were people who were philosophers, and they were secular philosophers who thought through financial means we could save the world and create a new wonderful world and didn't need Christianity. So the early economic philosophers were rather violently anti-Christian. He recognized this group, and inside of Voltaire's group, they formed the Economist Philosopher Group for that very purpose. They were also some of the first to promote free schools, and the reason they did that was because they saw this was a way to educate the people and allow their adepts, in other words, their controlling interests, to determine what was going to be taught in these schools. They promoted this idea to Louis XV, and he thought it was great. He didn't realize what they were going to do. He thought, well, they'll form schools, and there'll be Christian schools. And what happened is the people who were trained under Voltaire and D'Alembert and Diderot formed this anti-Christian teaching system to convert the peasants and the people and even the nobility in their educational schools to be anti-Christian. And then one of the important things was he also targeted booksellers so that these new schools would only have books available that had this anti-Christian or secular message, particularly of the writers that belonged to these groups. Voltaire and de Holbach, who was one of his disciples also, was the first in 1763 to say, well, what we need to do is form a secret society to promote these ideas that so far we're just sort of helter-skelter promoting it and speaking out and doing a few things, but we really haven't solidified it. And so they spoke of forming what they called a secret academy, which would be a collection of secular philosophies. And they said that we'll organize ourselves sort of like the Freemasons have organized themselves. This was going to promote anti-Christian thought throughout Europe. During the French Revolution, right at the beginning of the French Revolution, Voltaire joined the Freemasons. Of course, he was 80-something years old when he joined. He was still promoting this revolution against Christianity, and he was quoted as saying, "Let us crush the altar, let the temples be destroyed, and let not a single worshiper be left to the God of the Christians."
All right, you hold that thought as we bring our other stations back on board. And there is a conspiracy. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Dr. Blaylock is simply discussing Voltaire's plan and the plan of the people who surrounded him. We're talking about the 1760s, about that time. Well, Voltaire is, of course, so hateful towards Christianity, and they want to destroy Christianity. And so they began to organize at that period to begin to set up schools and rewrite textbooks and set up programs to undermine the belief in the Catholic Church. So pick up the story there.
Yeah, they targeted the Catholic Church because at the time, of course, it had most of the power. But there was the beginning of the Protestant movement with Martin Luther and Calvin. At first, they aligned themselves with the Protestant movement to use them as a weapon. But then they turned on the Protestant movement and said, we have to destroy all of Christianity. And so they did that as well. They targeted both groups, the Protestants and the Catholics. Now, in the second volume, which is the Antimonarchical Conspiracy, he's primarily discussing this new revolution against the monarchies. It had never really been what we call a revolution in modern terms. In the past, you had more revolt. You didn't actually want a form of a government. You just changed the leaders. So there were all these beheadings and killings and wars and such, infighting to put your leader at the head of the government. But the government system was the same. Well, for the first time in history, we saw insistence that there be an actual revolution in which the entire social order was destroyed and replaced by a completely new system from top to bottom. He called the groups that were organizing this occult masons, because in France, in particular, in Germany in particular, we saw a Masonic order that was beginning to catch on to this idea of destroying the monarchy, but they knew they had to keep it secret. So they had death oaths in this occult Masonic orders, so that if you spoke out, they would kill you. They would put you on an assassin's list and hunt you down. So that kept people from talking as they were organizing this revolution. Now, it's interesting that at the time they were organizing this revolution, most of the speakers, the Eilenbergs and the Diderots and the Les Harpes and the Voltaires.
Hold that thought for just a minute, if you would please, just for a minute here, and then we'll be right back with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Go ahead, Russell.
These people were actually financially supported by the royalty, by the kings. For instance, D'Alembert lived on a pension from the King of France and Prussia, and his apartment was actually a gift from Louis the 16th. Yet he was secretly undermining the monarchy. Diderot, who was one of the big personalities in the French Revolution, was supported by the Emperor of Russia, which eventually would fall to the same revolution. So we see that all of these people, and of course Voltaire was supported by numerous kings and ministers. They were pretty much organizing themselves secretly, but they still hadn't solidified this organization enough to make it effective. As they were trying to do this, the Masonic order began to add different degrees of higher degrees for people who were interested in revolution, people who wanted to actually make the step to destroy the monarchy. But they knew that all the Masons couldn't be trusted, so they created higher degrees, and one of them was the Knights of Rosicrucis, or the Rosicrucians. And in this, once you reach that level, they explain that Christ was the destroyer of the unit of God, and they teach that Jesus was just a common criminal Jew who was crucified for his crimes. And so that took that adept and made sure that he was on board. He understood that this was an anti-Christian movement that is also seeking to destroy this form of government. The next degree was the degree of Kadosh, or what meant the regenerated man. And they told this story of Hiram, which actually was sort of a myth of the building of Solomon's temple, and Hiram was murdered. And they said that is our purpose, to avenge the death of Hiram. Well, they told him, as you reach this degree, well, that's not really true. We're really avenging the death of Jacques de Molay, who was the head of the Grand Master of the Knights Templar.
And, of course, he was executed about 1310, 1320 period, because, of course, they were Luciferian, and that's why he was executed at that time, many hundreds of years previously. Go ahead.
Right, by King Philip, and so he killed de Molay. And so what they were teaching the adepts at this stage of their initiation was that our purpose is to avenge the death of our Knights Templar leader by destroying the monarchy. And so he said our final secret is that we're seeking equality and liberty. That means we level everything, and we have absolute liberty in which no civil law can tell us what to do. We're answerable to no one but the revolution itself, which, of course, this sounds exactly like the Marxian revolutions in the Soviet Union and China later. It says you have freedom as long as you do what we tell you. And so what they began to do is organize the Masonic lodges pushing towards this idea of revolution. Well, it was beginning to spread throughout Europe. Adam Westhoff was aware of this. He was attuned to the fact that there was these rumblings against the monarchy, and that there were there was great sympathy for his anti-Christian movement. We go back, if we look at the what he discusses as the true origin of Masonry, he said actually they came from a the Manes, M-A-N-E-S, and this was supposedly a slave who was gradually, he was freed from his slavery, and he was moving into a secret order to get vengeance for slavery. And he preached liberty and equality. And he led up to this idea of there being two gods. There was a good God and there was an evil God. He also taught Kabbalistic masonry, that is the Kabbalah. And he mixed in some Rosicrucians and the Martinists. So he was sort of the founder of this occult branch of masonry. And that was the one that was being led into this violent revolution against the monarchy in France. Now, interestingly, it was his group that created the signs that were later used by the Masons we know today. That is a sign, a grip, and a word, which was secret, so that you could recognize fellow Masons. He also was very important in the movement known as the Manichaean movement, which was the basis of his movement. And Adam Westhoff told his disciples, he said, study the Manichaean philosophy because that's very important to our movement. Well, the Manichaeans believed that they didn't answer to anyone in a civil authority, that they were free from all restraints. And so that's why he was attracted to the Manichaeans. And we know that the French Revolution, of course, the final Masonic push to
create... Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Russell, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russell is simply taking us in the background. The Masonic movement, certainly in Europe, after the establishment of the Illuminati, now we're up around, after 1776, and Weishaupt recognizes, of course, the importance of Masonry and the fact that there's an influence of Manichaeism in there. And the Manichaeans, of course, were followers of Mani, who believed that there were two gods, a good god and a bad god, and that the whole purpose really is to be totally free of the restraints of government. People could only be free if government was destroyed. And so Weishaupt is encouraging his followers to begin following these concepts of Manichaeism. And did they start joining the Masonic lodges at that time?
They were actually infiltrating the Masonic lodges, which were basically, in the beginning, was just had to do with the actual people who did masonry. In other words, they were architects. They built things. But gradually they had this mystical segment, and they pushed these people out changed their motivation and their final goal. And that was to combine this mysticism and the ancient secrets to create a new society, a new world. Now, one of the leaders of this occult masonry was the Grand Orient Lodge in France. And ironically, the Grand Master of the Grand Orient Lodge was Philip d'Orléans, who was the relative of Louis XVI, who plotted a lot of the final revolution from the inside, because he had helped Adam Westhoff secretly infiltrate Louis XVI's entire royal ministers with the Illuminati. Necker was an Illuminati, and he was one, the Minister of Finance, who caused the Great Starvation, which the historians now talk about that led to the French Revolution as if it was just a natural event. But Necker engineered this mass starvation so that the people would revolt against the king. And this was all done primarily through this Grand Orient. Now, Adam Westhoff had formed the Illuminati in 1776. In fact, May of 1776. And the month of May is important because you now hear about May Day celebrations back when the Soviet Union was at its peak of power. And you always wonder, well, why do they have a May Day celebration when the revolution was November 1917, was the final revolution? Well, it's May Day because the Illuminati was formed in May of 1776. Well, he was secretly, Adam Westhoff, through his Illuminati group, which was highly organized. This was not the loose organization that Voltaire had. He made it into an artwork, into a revolutionary engine, and he did not want to bring in the Grand Orient Lodge until the last minute. But he saw that the revolution was building, that the Orleans was pushing it. And so he instructed his people to enter the Grand Orient Lodge and go ahead and initiate the revolution. And so that's basically how we had this one lodge as the Knightus. Now, the lodges in France grew rapidly. Throughout all of Paris, it went to something like 60 or 70 lodges. There were over 600 lodges formed throughout France during this period, and they were all secret areas of revolutionary planning, secretly directed through the Illuminati, but made to look like it was Masonic. And if you read a lot of the history books, they'll talk about the Masonic influence. There's no question that the Masonic orders played a part, but they leave out the Illuminati because they think it was destroyed, but I'll show you the secret there. Now, the Jacobins, which was actually formed through a union of the Rosicrucians, the Masonic orders, and the Club of Brenton, and the Illuminati actually brought all these groups together to form what was called the Jacobins, and that was in 1786. Now, their primary purpose was a powerful propaganda group and the military arm of the actual revolution. They created what they even called the Propagandist Club, and its purpose was to infiltrate France, particularly Paris, with his propaganda against the king, portraying him as a tyrant. Well, Louis the 16th was one of the most benevolent kings that France had ever known. You know, he never signed a death warrant. He outlawed torture of prisoners. All kings, as they assumed office, had the right to tax the people with a special tax. He obliterated that. I mean, he was just a very benevolent king. And they knew that, so they had to build a case against him that was false, and they used their Minister of Finance, Necker, to help do that, because Necker took food and ordered his men to take the food and hide it in special warehouses so the people would start to starve and blame it on Louis the 16th and his remaining loyal ministers. Now, in order to get a people to revolt, they really couldn't get the French people, the actual French people, to revolt, except some of the poor people. So they hatched an idea. What they would do is bring in foreign criminals, primarily from Italy. And they brought in all these thugs and brigands and criminals from prisons and such in huge numbers. They also opened up the Masonic lodges for the first time to people of what they considered the lower order, that was peasants and working people and merchants, so that they could train them in violent techniques. And so they created this virtual army of riffraff whose purpose was to actually carry out the violence of the revolution. One of the criticisms of the person who actually did the introduction, the foreword to the book, Stanley Yockey, who is a priest, and he's a professor of astrophysics, and he said one of his criticisms of the book is that Borel didn't identify this movement as Luciferian, as being satanic. But in the book, a couple of places, he hints at that, and he says that Philip de Orleans, for instance, was a conspirator by Lucifer. So he makes a couple of hints at the Luciferian origin here. Now, once the revolution got started, of course, they saw the Illuminati were secretly giving orders to the Jacobins. And, of course, their plan was that once the revolution was over and the violence had reached its peak and they no longer needed the Jacobins that were not Illuminati members, they just had them killed off, and that's what happened to the Jacobins. They were destroyed in the revolution. And so this is the way the Illuminati works, and we see in modern revolutions that pattern continues. In the Russian Revolution, all the original revolutionaries of the Russian Revolution were killed off by the time of Lenin and Stalin. They say the revolution consumes its founders. Let me see as we get into this a little bit deeper, more as we get into Adam Westhoff, particularly his methodology. Now, as I said, he was a professor of canon law at Ingolstadt, University of Ingolstadt, and at the time, Jesuits were the main professors in most universities, particularly in Germany, because they were very intelligent, and they trained themselves in high scholarship. So he hated the Jesuits, and he wanted to get rid of them, and so slowly he did. And he brags that by the end of the French Revolution, his university and most universities in Germany, you couldn't find a Jesuit priest in the universities, that they all the positions were held by his Illuminati members. Now, what happened eventually to Westhoff was that after the Bavarian police had confiscated his papers and arrested him, of course, they let him go, and he was put on pension. He was paid money. And they pretended that the Illuminati had been successfully destroyed. Well, all of the people who knew him said one of the characteristics of Adam Westhoff was he pretends to be silent, and say when he's silent, that's when he's working towards the revolution the hardest. And said, that's when you should worry the most. He preached virtue. That was one of the things. He said, the new society will be a virtuous moral society. Well, his brother died, and Adam Westhoff got his brother's wife pregnant. And that was a huge scandal. Well, he tried to kill the baby, and engineered having some of his friends make abortifacients to try to kill the baby and poison the mother. So it shows what kind of character we're dealing with. He was a great admirer of the method of the Jesuits. He said their education, their control, and their seeking control throughout the world is something he admired, but he hated them because of their Christianity. And so he imitated the best of each of the organizations, the Rosicrucians, the Manichaeans, the Martinists, the Masons, and eventually he joined the Masonic Order so he could study them from the inside. And he told his people what we need to do. We need to concentrate on the youth of the different countries. He said, they're our revolutionary fire. And so the way he organized the Illuminati was very clever. He created these group of people who were loyal to him, and they were to go out and recruit new, what he called adepts, this new entrance to the order. And he said, once they're in the very beginning degrees, in which you don't really tell them anything, and you assure them that this organization is not anti-Christian, is no danger to the monarchy, that we respect the government, and we're very loyal to Christianity. That's emphasized in the lower degrees. And he said, in order to become a member, you have to have this new adept tell all of his secrets, all sexual secrets, all secrets of his family, financial secrets, drinking habits, anything he's done that's embarrassing or illegal. And said, careful notebooks were kept on everybody who entered. And the purpose of that was that way you could make sure they would never betray the order of Illuminati. He said, we own their secrets, and because we own their secrets, they can never betray us. Well, there's an organization today from Yale University that does the very same thing called the Skull and Bones. And in Skull and Bones, the initiate is stripped naked and is told, you tell everything that is a secret in your life, particularly sexual secrets. And that way, they have lifelong loyalty. And so that was one of the way he did the initiates. Now, as they go through their different levels, moving up through the different levels of the Illuminati, he weeds out the ones who probably are not going to go for the anti-Christian message or the anti-monarchical message. But the ones that are, he lets into the higher degrees. And he says, what you do with the ones in the lower degrees, you make them think that they've reached the highest degree. And they do that, of course, in Masonry. For instance, the American and the British Masons are never allowed above what used to be the lower 3 degrees. They never really get into the occult part of the Masonry, at least at the time Borel was writing. But once you reach these higher degrees, then suddenly they announce to you that they are anti-Christian, that Christ is the enemy, and we're out to destroy the enemy, and we're going to unseat the governments of the world and destroy civil law. Well, by then, you've picked the people who agree with your viewpoint. Now, they even had certain libraries for these people that reached these levels. They were only allowed to read certain books, and these books were provided. They even encouraged their members to steal books from libraries or from government holdings of rare books. They said, get the books that we need any way you need. You could do it. And so each adept had his own library of books chosen by the top people in the Illuminati that you were allowed to read. And that way they were gradually molding their minds in the way they thought, which is very important. And one of the things, the two of the things they wanted was to instill in them the concept of liberty and equality. And later they added fraternity. And, of course, fraternity was that you're loyal to the Illuminati organization and your fellow members over everything else in your life, even your wife and children. Here's a quote of some of the concepts of Illuminati. It says, liberty and equality are the essential rights that man and his original primitive perfection receive from nature. Property struck the first blow at equality. Political society or government were the first oppressors of liberty. To reinstate man to his primitive rights of equality and liberty, we must begin by destroying all religion, all civil society, and finish by the destruction of all property. Well, when you put that together, that is Marxism. That is the whole program of Marxism. Destroy the opium of the people, which is religion. Destroy all civil society and laws as they exist and replace them with a new society. And then confiscate all private property. The biggest enemy of the Marxists was private property. And then we talked about the secret societies. He said, yes, princes and nations shall disappear from off the face of the earth. Yes, a time shall come when men shall acknowledge no other law but the great book of nature. This revolution shall be the work of secret societies, and that is one of our grand mysteries.
And, you know, I think it's so interesting for our listener out there who's skeptical. Well, there's a wonderful book written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, who, of course, is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, but a brilliant historian. And he writes a book called Fire in the Minds of Men, where he actually talks about how the entire world revolutionary movement that began first with the French Revolution and continued throughout France and Europe and ended not only with the first Russian Revolution but the revolution in Cuba, which brought Fidel Castro to power. It was all part of this same occult revolution that was really based in this effort to destroy Christianity. But then, of course,
if you know your history, you know that after the French Revolution, we had the Revolution of 1830, we had the Revolution of 1848, the Revolution of 1871, all occurring in France, and then this was building the revolution to come in Russia in 1917. So we see this orderly movement, all of the same thoughts, all of the same methodology that came directly through this funnel of Voltaire, D'Alembert, Diderot, and finally Adam Westhoff, who organized it into a machine for revolution.
And really continues into this day. Of course, we brought the communists to power in Rhodesia, and even within the last year, we brought the Maoist communists to power in Nepal. Why would we do something like that? Why would we be backing the Maoists who are trying to overthrow the government in Nepal? Because it's a world revolution, a continuing world revolution, that began back there in the 1700s and persists to this day. Throughout the world, and much of it is, of course, is financed by foreign aid from our own government. Well, Russell, let's go right ahead. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up this section of the program, then we'll make our announcements, and then we'll get started with the rest of it. But what else would you like to bring out the next couple of minutes?
Well, one of the great quotes, he shows how people don't see this as it's happening. He says, "Its progress is imperceptible to the man who is not formed to observe it." So he knows that if you're not attuned to what's happening, you'll never see it, because all of its secrets, all of its occurring in the higher centers of power, secretly in these dark rooms being plotted by people. And he demonstrates that this is not just words. This brought about the French Revolution. And in Billington's book, he shows exactly how they did that. In Borel's book, he shows in even greater detail. And remember, Borel escaped France. They were going to kill him. He escaped France, and Britain took him in to save him from the September massacre. So here's a man who was a witness and lived in France throughout the entire period of the French Revolution. So this is an eyewitness, a man of historical scholarship, who's writing these words.
And I really think it's so vitally important that people understand that there is a world revolution. There are not one conspiracy, but many conspiracies, but bound together with a common denominator. And that is an intense hatred of God and of Christianity, both Catholicism and the Protestant faith. And there is an organized effort now here in the United States to destroy the last vestiges of Christianity. And we see this changing here in America as they change the message of the Christian church, as we change the music of the Christian church from one that honored God to one that pushes sensuality. We find 400,000 Protestant churches have joined the church growth movement, and their leader, the self-appointed leader of the church growth movement, well, at least self-appointed, actually he's been appointed by Time Magazine. Time Magazine says the most important minister in our country is a man named Rick Warren, who, of course, was recently back reporting to the Council on Foreign Relations and giving a talk to the UNESCO branch of the United Nations. And what is the purpose of the United Nations? Why, the destruction of Christianity and, of course, the establishment of a one-world order under a new government. So we're going to be back here in just a couple of minutes with Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we'll be telling a lot more about this incredible story that Abbe Borel had written, here just before the beginning of the 1800s. But here was a man who was witness to this historical event, the French Revolution, which preceded what's going on in the world today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And of course, if you've enjoyed this program this evening, a copy of the tape of this is available, and there will be another hour to the tape as Dr. Blaylock discusses more of this whole incredible scheme which is being played out, and it is the historical forerunner of what's going on today. And the French Revolution was the first in a series of revolutions that led us to where we are today, and I think is leading us now into the Third World War, which is already, I believe, underway in the Near East and the Middle East. Well, if you'd like to put this into its spiritual perspective, let me suggest a book which I've written called The Brotherhood of Darkness. If you have not read it, it's a very brief introduction to what's going on. I recommend it to you. It's The Brotherhood of Darkness. You can also get it on DVD or you can get it on VHS. And we'll at least introduce you to this entire concept and give you the sources of reference where you can verify and see this is really true. And if it is true, then it means that your whole educational system has been a lie. If it is really true, it means that the media in the United States is controlled, and the majority of the people who are telling you what's going on are simply deceiving you and keeping you from seeing the big picture. And behind everything is this common denominator, a persistent hatred of the God of the Bible. So if you'd like, of course, to get the book we refer to, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And let me suggest several videos we have, or DVDs, that will put this thing into its proper perspective. Entertainment, music, has a powerful impact upon people. Certainly the rock culture, the rock bands that we have, these people have more notoriety than most of our politicians. And yet, of course, many of these people have frankly sold their souls to the devil, knowingly, intentionally, given themselves over to Lucifer. And if you doubt that, why, we have a wonderful series of DVDs. There's the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour DVD or VHS version of They've Sold Their Souls to Rock and Roll. If you haven't seen it, you really should. Then to understand America's beginning and the influence of the secret societies right here in the United States, coming from Elizabethan England in the 1600s, and then having a profound impact here in America at the time when our Constitution was written, why, you certainly need to get the DVD or VHS, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. We have another great DVD. It's called The Da Vinci Con. It really goes into what's happening in Hollywood and the fact that some of the script readers there, the people who write the scripts create the movies that are programmed into your mind and the minds of our children, have actually knowingly, intentionally given themselves over to demonic spirits. And we'll tell you how the demons are really writing the scripts that are being presented as movies. That's The Da Vinci Con. That's almost 3 hours. It is one of the most gripping DVDs I've ever seen. It's put out by the same person, Pastor Joe Schimmel, who put out They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll series. We hope many of you will want to get our material on the supernatural. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are supernatural things. There really are people who are mediums who've tapped into the other dimension, because this is what has kept this movement going, not only for hundreds of years, but for thousands of years. And, of course, one would be our 4-tape set on the supernatural, the book written by Johanna Michelson, The Beautiful Side of Evil, because Johanna Michelson was a medium, and you really enjoy not only reading her book, but hearing our interviews with her. And again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters or one of our catalogs or our health catalog, why, give us a call at that number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to understand what's happening as far as the immigration issue, why, ask for a copy of our May issue. That's the May issue. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Arthur Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we have been talking about a book that was written by Abbey Burrell about the Jacobins, and the book was written in the late 1700s, going into the background of the French Revolution. And, of course, this movement, which was known at that time as the Illuminati, which was instrumental in bringing about the French Revolution, and the leader of that organization, Adam Weishaupt. Now, people today will sort of spoof you, it's sort of a ridicule you if you talk about these secret societies, and yet, ladies and gentlemen, history is full of secret societies. There's always been secret societies, and I think we have, of course, to let people understand that you cannot understand hardly anything going on today unless you understand the influence of those secret societies. So if you'd like, of course, to listen to Dr. Russell Blaylock's explanation of what's going on, why, Russell, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
What I'm going to try to do here is bring some parallels between the modern revolutions and what was being talked about back then. For instance, one of the modern things you hear in the Soviet lexicon is the idea of the new Soviet man. That in Soviet society, they have to mold all of the population to retrain them, brainwash them, make them think the way they want them to think.
Hold on for just a minute and see if we can get rid of that. All right, well, I'm going to ask our producer to call our engineer and see if we can... go right ahead, Russell.
This idea in the modern Russian Revolution of this new Soviet man, the rebuilt man. And so let's look back at what Adam Weishaupt had to say back in 1776. He said, according to my view, I cannot employ men as they are. I must form them. Each class of my own order must be a preparatory school for the next, and all this must be necessary and be the work of time. So it's the very idea came from Adam Weishaupt and his highly organized Illuminati, the idea that we can't just have a revolution and take over the reins of government. We've got to completely reform man himself in our image rather than the image of God. Now, as far as this people having difficulty believing these secret societies actually wielded that much power, you must always keep in mind that Weishaupt was a professor of canon law at one of the most prestigious universities. He recruited people of power. He said, while we want the youth because of their revolutionary zeal, we want men of power. So he particularly looked for professors, ministers, dukes, nobility, people who could make things happen. And that's who were recruited into the Illuminati. And it spread throughout all of Europe so that they were a dominant force and a dominant philosophy. And this is a quote of some of his adepts that were very powerful men and played a big role in the French Revolution. He said, woe be to those whom shall meet between it and us. Woe to the man who shall dare oppose so positive a determination. The French Revolution is but the forerunner of a revolution greater by far and much more solemn,
hold that
which will be the last.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we're having a little problem with we'll be getting this under control again, though. Go right ahead, Russell.
Well, in case they missed that quote, I want to give the last part of it again.
Please do.
Because this is important to understand. At 1776, and all the way through the French Revolution that ended in 1792, they had already planned the final revolution of the world. He said the French Revolution is but the forerunner of a revolution greater by far and much more solemn, and which will be the last. In other words, once they reach their final goal, which is to take the entire world, there will be no more revolution. And it's also interesting, Lenin and Stalin borrowed another phrase from Adam Westhoff, and that is the concept of the permanent revolution. He said that the revolution, once it starts, once we initiate it, will never stop, because we must never allow the Christians to ever gain a foothold again, or the monarchists. But he knew that the battle would be unending. And if you look at the Soviet Revolution and the Chinese Communist Revolution throughout the world, it's an eternal, constant, unending revolution, and that's what he impressed upon their minds. Now, they spend huge amounts of money on propaganda, again, to show you the power of these people. For instance, in 1797, they lavished 21 million lira on propaganda, and the next year, 30 million lira, just to control public opinion. And one of the things that Adam Westhoff was expert at was controlling public opinion. And all the historians that looked at him said, this is one of his chief characteristics. He was obsessed with it. Ways to mold people's opinions and minds to think the way he wants you to think, what we now call thought control. He also emphasized, as we saw previously, D'Alembert with Voltaire, that we need a gradualist revolution once the violent revolution has taken place. He said, when the object is a universal revolution, all the members of these societies, aiming at the same point and aiding each other, must find means of governing invisibly, and with any appearance of violent measures, not only the higher and more distinguished class of a particular state, but men of all stations, all nations, and of every religion, insinuate the same spirit everywhere, in silence, but with the greatest activity possible, direct the scattered inhabitants of the earth toward the same point.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here with Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Russell Bailey. Russell, I'm going to have ask if you... Oh, there we are. So he said you've gotten ready. But go ahead.
We're back working.
We're back and working just fine.
And one of the other things that we see in Adam Westhoff's design of his plan is he did just like we saw in the Russian Revolution. They rewrote the calendar. They renamed the months. They had names that were changed. For instance, Stalin's name was not Stalin. Lenin's name was not Lenin. All of these were different names. Well, this is what we saw Voltaire had recommended. This is what we saw Adam Westhoff had actually implemented. His name was Spartacus. And so we see all of these things not only being theoretical in these secret societies, but we see them brought to fruition in the future revolutions, for instance, 1830, 1848, 71, and then finally the Russian Revolution in 1917. And we see that these revolutions were carried out by these exact methods that he outlines. Now, a lot of people think that the phrase end justifies the means came from Karl Marx or Lenin. It came from Adam Westhoff. And another sentence that people constantly repeat, I think came from Lenin, was that everything which is useful is an act of virtue. You see this throughout the writings of Lenin. He was copying exactly Adam Westhoff, who repeatedly said that's how you determine morality. If it promotes the revolution, if it promotes the purpose of the Illuminati, that is virtuous, it is moral, even if it entails murder and mass slaughter. And it's interesting, in the French Revolution, a lot of people don't know this, but the plan was that they, and this was one of the quotes, that the French society can feed 12 million Frenchmen. All the other 12 million are to be put to death. So they were the early instigators of population control, and so they had a plan to wipe out half the population of France, saying that this would give plenty of land for others to farm and graze and do what they have a freer life. And, of course, they planned this for the whole world, was depopulation. And, of course, you see these same plans being discussed today. Now, Dr. Monteith talked about the UN as being one of the eventual evolved plans from the Illuminati in 1776. Well, that's actually was almost said verbatim, not calling it the UN, by Adam Westhoff. For instance, he said, "In a word, we must establish an unusual empire over the whole world without destroying the civil ties. Under this new empire, all other governments must be able to pursue their usual process and to exercise every power excepting that of hindering the order from attaining its ends and rendering virtue triumphant over vice." In other words, we would have where you could have all your own governments, you could retain your heads of government, your form of government, but we would determine how society of the world would eventually be ruled, and you would not be able to resist. Well, that is the plan of the United Nations. They say we must encompass the power of the earth with a legion of indefatigable men, all directing their labors according to the plan of the order toward the happiness of human nature, but all that is to be done in silence. Our brethren are mutually to support each other and to seek to acquire these new places which give power for the good of the cause. And this is exactly what we've seen in the modern world. And of course, as I said, this idea of revolution and replacing of whole governments had never even been considered prior to the, that period. One of the things I wanted to emphasize is also how they used writers to promote their new philosophies. Because this philosophy was opposed to everything that people believed before. It was destroying all Christian belief, transcendence, truth, belief in Jesus Christ as the Son of God and resurrection. All these things were opposed. So they had to change men's minds. Well, Adam Westhoff figured out how to do it. He said, what we'll do, we'll form a legion of writers. And those that are really good but are unknown, we will make famous. And you're to do everything in your power, you people of influence, to make sure this person's writings are considered the only thing that a person of intelligence should read. Well, that's exactly what we see today. We're almost told what is to be read, because if you haven't read this person's book, you're not considered intelligent. For instance, you always wondered, how did C.P. Snow become the expert on China during the fall of China to communism? Well, it was because C.P. Snow was a communist sympathizer, and they knew that. So they groomed him and took him out of obscurity, elevated him, and told the world that he was the world expert on China. Yet there were all these scholars who were true experts on China, who knew what the communists were going to do, but they were silenced. And that's the other thing that Adam Westhoff taught his disciples. He said, what you do with the writers who oppose us is you use every measure to destroy them. And he created a system of booksellers, which was incredibly clever. But all over Europe, he engineered buying out the booksellers. And he told them, handle only the books of our illuminated writers. And other writers who oppose us either don't sell their books or send their books back to them and tell them that nobody would buy the book. And to make sure that the bookseller didn't lose any money, there was a special fund set up to subsidize the bookseller for any losses by handling only Illuminati-approved books. But gradually, and he was very proud of this, virtually all booksellers throughout Europe were controlled by the Illuminati and only sold books, or primarily sold books, that were approved by the Illuminati. Well, this gradually, because the public was only reading Illuminati-approved books, began to change the Christian perspective to a secular perspective. And philosophy suddenly became the dominant way of thinking, and science had its ascendancy. And then suddenly, after all the years of socialist failure, because socialism was always utopian, and when people would see it in action, it always failed, but suddenly arises this person out of nowhere, an obscure scribbler who couldn't even hold a job. Suddenly he comes forward with the idea of something never heard of before, and that was the concept of scientific socialism. Because Idam Westhoff realized that if you attach the word scientific to it, who could resist it? Because science was absolute. Science was truth. It was proven. And so by attaching the idea of scientific socialism, which could not be resisted, which predicted the wave of the future with scientific accuracy, you were just to lay down and accept it.
I know you're speaking of Karl Marx.
Karl Marx,
of course, 1848. He writes the Communist Manifesto, and he's actually financed by a secret society called the League of the Just, which many people feel is a continuation of the Illuminati.
Well, and this was one of the principles that Adam Westhoff emphasized. He said, we constantly are changing the name of our order so that we're not always known as Illuminati. He said, we use different names, and one of the names he used was a literary society. And he formed these literary societies where it would be just as Illuminati adepts, and in order to enter, you had to review these books that were approved by the Illuminati, and of course, being scholars that he created a sense of greatness, everybody wanted to be associated with the literary society, just like we see in today. People look at the New York Review of Books to pick the books to read, because if you haven't read a book that's the top 10 books on the New York bestseller list, you're not a very intelligent person. You're not keeping up with the pulse of new thought. And this is how existentialism and all these crazy philosophies raced around the world every time they would pop up, because you had people of influence who controlled it. Now, if you want an accurate modern updating of this, I suggest the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Rene Wurmser, which was the general counsel for the investigating Carol B. Reese Committee on Tax-Free Foundations. He shows that how this Adam Westhoff's plan now was modernized, and they used the enormous power and influence of tax-free foundations to carry out this very plan, because they control which textbooks are chosen for schools. They take control of many journals, literary societies, book reviews, educational societies. For instance, they created a thing called the American Council of Learned Societies, the National Academy of Sciences, which I'm sure you've heard of, the NEA, the Social Sciences Research was conceived. All of these things control what's being read, what's being learned, and what's being taught to school. The Social Science Research Council was created by these tax-free foundations. They do book reviews, literary production of journals, textbooks, the reading material for social sciences. All of these things are done. The American Council on Education, supported by the Carnegie Foundation, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Rockefeller Foundation, Ford Foundation, Alfred P. Sloan. It's formed by the NEA, heavy government contracts, and major foundations. But if you don't read books that are put out by the American Council of Education, you're considered behind the times. And so this clever method of funding with these huge funds from the tax-free foundations, they control what is read, what is learned, what is the curriculum for schools, which is exactly what Adam Westhoff was recommending back in 1776.
Control what people read, control what they believe. Well, go right ahead, Russell, because, you know, this is so apropos of what goes on today. We see this constantly. I remember Monica Jensen Stevenson wrote a wonderful book called Kiss the Boys Goodbye, told about, of course, not only the men we abandoned in Vietnam, but about the CIA involvement in drugs. That was the last thing they wanted. Somebody got to her publisher and had them pull all the copies off of the bookshelves in America and the bookstores, and, of course, the book was simply withdrawn from publication. They would not distribute the book at all. When Monica eventually got the copyright back, moved to Canada, had it published up there, somebody bought up the publisher and just accidentally shredded 5,000 copies of her book just by mistake. And next book you put out, another book on the Vietnam War called Spite House, and there, of course, she and her publisher got sued on a nonsensical issue. Why? To suppress the book. Ladies and gentlemen, this sort of thing goes on in the world today, but it didn't just begin here in the 20th century. It goes back to really the 18th century and the plan laid out by Adam Weishaupt. That's why this book is so vitally important that Dr. Blaylock's talking about. Please go ahead, Russell.
In fact, a modern example also is Carroll Quigley.
Right.
You know, as your interview with him clearly showed, they virtually destroyed the book. And it was beginning to become a bestseller. And he's one of the great historians of the 20th century. He's not an unknown person. Now, one of the things Adam Weishaupt did, it was very clever, which you see in modern society as well. He constantly gave the assurance to everybody that he wants to erase all laws and controls so there's absolute liberty. Liberty was always the word on the tip of his tongue. Giving everyone that's fighting for this revolution the idea that once it succeeds, everyone's going to be free and there's going to be happiness and virtue and plentiful or plenty for everyone. But secretly at the top, he let everybody know what was eventually coming. He said the plan be laid and conducted by one man only, who has the sole power of giving all orders, making all laws that are necessary for its establishment. Now, that's exactly the trick that was pulled in Russia by Lenin during the revolution in 1917. Everyone thought the revolution was going to bring freedom and prosperity. Instead, it brought one-man rule under an iron fist. And this has been repeated throughout the world with these socialist and communist revolutions, which are not the ultimate. That's not their goal. It's not communist revolution. It's taking pieces of all of these revolutions and creating a one-world government to control people. And as long as you do what you're told and give up your property and give up your rights and give your rights over your children over to the state in their control, you can live free and easy within their control system. But people need to understand that secretly these people have these plans, and that was one of the things Adam Weishaupt always said. He said, it's like concentric circles. He said, in the center of the circle, there's only me. I make all the plans, and I make all the determinations. And outside of that circle is another small circle that has four or five or six of my adepts. He actually had 12 called Areopagites. And these 12 Areopagites that were eventually formed were his ruling council. But they were very trusted people. And he held secrets on them because, don't forget, he had dossiers on them.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russell simply pointing out that the whole plan was to create a centralized authority. And talking about liberty on one hand, isn't it wonderful once we succeed with this revolution, the world revolution, everybody will be free. But the truth of the matter was he wasn't interested in freedom. He was interested in total control and using the world revolution to centralize power in his hands or whoever would follow him. And there was always certainly Adam Weishaupt at the center and then a small number of people surrounding him, all of whom he controlled because he had secrets on all of them. He knew things about them that they would not want to be released to the public. And this same sort of thing exists today in the ruling cliques of our society. And a perfect example as Russell had given the example of the Skull and Bones Society, where to be initiated, you're stripped naked, and you must tell all of your sexual, most intimate sexual secrets, and from that time, the order. The Skull and Bones, a secret society, to which both our president and John Kerry, his opponent in the last election, belonged, the order owns the individual. Please go ahead, Russell.
And to solidify this control, this literary control, so you knew what people were writing and they were reading only your works, he told his adepts, the people that were in this higher circle, he said, what you do with people who are writers who are writing against us, he said, discredit by all means possible every man of talent that you cannot bring over to your party. We see this today all the time. If you write something that gets a little too close to the truth or speak out something that's a little too close to the truth, they have a virtual army of media and writers that could absolutely destroy your reputation. And if they can't find something bad about you, they can make it up. And there's not a lot you can do about it. Even if you win in a court, your reputation is ruined. And they know that. And that's what he told his people to do. And he bragged that scarcely could you find in all of Germany above two or three journals not in the hands of the United Brethren. So he was bragging just 5 years after the start of his Order of Illuminati that he had virtually controlled all the journals in Germany, which shows his enormous power. Now, as we get into some of the modern things, I'm going to leave the book a little bit just to point out some of these things. One was a movement that's concerned me a lot is this Theosophy movement, which was started by this uneducated woman named Blavatsky in 1875. She was sort of the front person. You know, they always have these people they put out for public view, but there's powers behind them. Well, she was the front person proposing this idea that she had this ancient wisdom she'd gotten from India and the Tibetan monks, and that this wisdom brought man closer to God and was going to create universal happiness if you would just follow this new teaching. Of course, it was distinctly anti-Christian. Well, her successor was a woman by the name of Annie Besant. And then after her was Alice Bailey, who's written a lot of books recently. One of the books is called The Reappearance of Christ, and I would encourage people to read this just to see exactly what's going on in the world. This was written in 1948, and here's a quote from it describing who these people actually are. It says, "A new type of mystic is coming to be recognized. He differs from mystics of the past by his practical interest in current world affairs and not in religion and church matters. He sees God imminent in all faith." So, in other words, we're going to destroy all faith. We're going to create a new religion. But we look back at Adam Westhoff in 1776. Burrell points out one of the obsessions of Burrell was to create a new religion that was devoid of God, devoid of a belief in Jesus Christ as a historical person, as the Son of God. Destroy all of that, but have this religion that's really secular and have a lot of the trappings of religion so they can have the mystic components and church ceremony, but make the people understand that, well, there's not really a God. We're not really praying to anybody. And we see this in the modern churches. Look how many modern churches, even Protestant churches, are teaching that, well, there's no hell in heaven. There's no judgment. Hell is not real. The devil's not real. There's no such thing as demons, and God doesn't reward you for behavior. Your job as a Christian in this new religion is to go out and do social good. And so you become a social worker, which is the new liberation theology. And this is in connection with this Theosophy. Well, Theosophy goes even further. It says what we've developed is this hierarchy. And they constantly talk about the Christ in this book, The Reappearance of the Christ. You think, initially, well, she must be Christian because she's talking about Christ. But she constantly says the Christ.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest, Dr. Russell Blaylock, and Russell is discussing the books by Alice Bailey, The Reappearance of the Christ, and of course, but it's not Jesus Christ, it's the Christ, and although she has a lot of verbiage that sounds it's Christian, they're really talking about a different God, because it's not that these people don't believe in God, it's just that they don't believe in the God of the Bible. They believe in an entirely different religious framework. One that, of course, looks to the other side, the dark side, for their power. And there is power there to be had, but you access that by endangering your eternal soul. So pick up the story there, Russell.
And basically what she's saying is that there's no such thing as a historical Christ. He did not exist. That this is a spiritual idea that we have. Well, the three spiritual leaders that she names is Hercules, of course we know there's no Hercules historically, the Christ, and Buddha. And so this is the hierarchy of their spiritual world, is these three entities. And that working for this hierarchy, to move man into this new way of thinking, is what they call the new group of world servers. These are people in influential positions throughout the world that are moving us in that direction. Well, if you get on their site, look, just type in new group of world servers, they don't really name the names, but they have a row of pictures up there. And it includes people like Bono, which you see a lot running around the world claiming he's Christian. Jimmy Carter, his wife, Nelson Mandela, Michael Moore, pictures up there. So we have people who are having a real impact on the way people are thinking. Political movement, political legislation, movement toward a loss of American sovereignty and the creation of world government, and these people are considered a new group of world servers. Now, she even goes throughout all of her books, which is about a dozen books she's written, supporting the United Nations, telling us how important it is. She said, when the United Nations has emerged into factual and actual power, the welfare of the world will be assured. And so this is what we're seeing. We're seeing through the Bilderbergers and Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateralists, all of these groups, they're all moving us toward this same goal, that there will be this preeminent world government, UN courts, UN regulation of taxes and property. And, of course, if you look at what the UN is doing, it's implementing exactly what Adam Westhoff had called for in the first place back in 1776.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Russell Blaylock. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Blaylock is talking about how the United Nations is being utilized to bring about the world government that Adam Weishaupt had written about, but even more recently, a woman named Alice Bailey, who wrote a number of books. Well, she really didn't write them. She admits they were channeled to her by a spirit. His name was Joao Cool. And Joaquin was a demonic being. And all of these books he wrote talk about the necessity of this new world order, and she used that term specifically. And, of course, it was used then sometime later by George Herbert Walker Bush. And I can remember reading things written by the occultists who said, why, we've never heard anybody use that term except for Alice Bailey. And, of course, she was deeply involved with the occult, this whole idea of either the thousand points of light that George Bush talked about, that all came from the writings of Alice Bailey. Whether he knew it or not, I do not know, but so many of the ideas put forward by George Herbert Walker Bush came right out of the writings of this woman who was deeply involved in the occult and whose ideas were channeled to her by a demonic spirit. So pick up the story there, Russell.
Yeah, and she even endorses the whole idea of secret society and people in secret areas controlling world movement. For instance, she says, that great body of illuminated minds which guides the destiny of the world, his disciples through masters of wisdom and through his followers who toil unseen and usually unrecognized behind world affairs. So this is exactly what Adam Westhoff was talking. We make things happen, but you never see us. We're the ones that are pushing these movements toward a certain way of thinking, a certain political event, but you never see us because we have implanted our people inside of the government in positions of power in the media, the writers, the booksellers, everybody who controls public opinion, and without it being known publicly and secretly, we do this to move the world in the direction we want to do. And she even says the great educational movements, the forums of people in all lands, and the values which are now unfolding through radio and moving picture industry. Other deeply affected are the press, the publishers of world literature, speakers, writers, radio commentators, newspapermen, and social workers. So she's continuing the very idea Adam Westhoff said. Use all of these means to control public thinking and recreate man in a new image. So we're seeing these modern implementations of things that Adam Westhoff had talked about. And in this new world, it's not God that's the center. It's not Jesus that's the center. It's man that's the center. She talks about the new world, the essential divinity of humanity, and evolutionary proof that mankind has steadily moved onward in wisdom and knowledge. In essence, man is God. And, of course, this is what some of these early movements were teaching, like as you got through the Cathars and the Gnostics. One of the fastest growing movements I've seen is Gnosticism. Every time you see on television a discussion of religion, a scholarly discussion of religion, you will notice one person is always there in the discussion group. It never fails on every channel, History Channel, no matter what, and Discovery Channel, and that is Elaine Pagels. Elaine Pagels is always introduced as a theological scholar. She is a self-admitted Gnostic, and in her books, one is the history of Gnosticism, and the other called Adam and Eve and the Serpent. Well, in the history of Gnosticism, she explains what Gnosticism is. She said, basically, Christians have chosen the wrong God, that Lucifer is the true God, and that the God that we worship is actually an imbecile God, a intellectually damaged God, and that Lucifer is actually the light and the good God. And she said the Gnostics worshiped the serpent in the Garden of Eden because the serpent was the source of wisdom and intelligence. And, of course, that's what Gnosis is knowledge. So this Gnostic movement is rapidly moving throughout the world. You would be amazed the number of leaders in the world who are powerful movers and shakers are Gnostics. You'll see it throughout your bookstores. The books on Gnosticism are proliferating like crazy. And as I say, there's never a discussion of theology in the public media that Elaine Pagels is not there explaining to you that the important thing was the Gnostic Gospels. Which were a bunch of made-up gospels that are not true gospels, that tells this different story of Jesus, that paints a picture of Jesus that is anti-Christian.
And for example, one of the major themes of Dan Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code, is that the Christians had suppressed the Gnostic Gospels, which were the true story of Christianity. Well, the basis of the Gnostic belief is that, there was the Supreme Being, and then, of course, he had two children. One was Christos, and the other was Sophia. And then Sophia had a child who was known as Edelbath, and he created the heaven and the earth, and he wasn't very smart, and he wasn't sort of a very ugly God, but he created the heaven and the earth, and he created Adam, and it really was the serpent, the good serpent, that wanted to free Adam from the oppression of the wicked god Adelboth. And you say, what sort of madness is that? And yet, of course, you'll find that recurrent theme all through Hollywood movies today, and this is the basis of so much of the intense hatred of Christianity by so many of our leaders today, because they worship a different God.
That's exactly right, and this Gnostic movement is people don't see it, because they're not paying attention. They're not even probably familiar with Gnosticism. But if you look in the popular writings and the intellectual writings, It's everywhere. The churches are being taken over by Gnostic ideas. And one of the great Gnostic ideas that comes through Alice Bailey is that we're all gods. And that's her direct quote, we are all gods. In other words, we start determining destiny. We actually are self-created. But Lucifer is at the top of the hierarchy. And she even uses the Westhoff idea that you destroy your enemies. If anybody opposes, you go to no ends to destroy them. She said, the capacity to direct energy towards overcoming all obstacles and destroying all that stands in its way. So you're not allowed to dissent. You're not allowed to have another idea. And she even gives her dream world, what she plans for the world. She said, the idea of a spiritual hierarchy which will govern the people throughout the world and will embody itself the best elements of monarchical, the democratic, the totalitarian, and the communistic regimes. Most of these groups of ideologies have latent in them much beauty, strength, and wisdom, and also a profound and valuable contribution to make to the whole. Well, communism has killed over 100 million people in the modern world, more people than have been killed in all the wars of history. It's the greatest mass slaughter the world has ever known. Yet here she's saying it contains much beauty, and we can borrow from communism and from totalitarian systems, which she includes Nazism, into this system. And she says there's three great nations that hold our destiny: United States, Great Britain, and Russia. What you're saying now, Russia is in its ascendancy and seems to direct world events. This whole charade of the terrorism, people forget that the terrorist elements in the modern world were all created by Russia. Russia had huge training camps for Middle Eastern terrorists. At the time, the terrorists couldn't do any more than throw rocks. They brought them to Russia, armed them, told them how to make modern weapons, gave them the weapons, the training, and sent them back. They had the Patrice Lumumba School in Moscow, which was strictly for training Middle Eastern terrorists. The Newsweek reporter Arnold E. Bush Grave wrote about this, how this was all planned in Cuba, that the Russian KGB and the Cuban secret intelligence operatives met with the Middle Eastern terrorists and worked out this whole plan to train them and create this modern world of terrorism. Well, who's supplying the terrorists today? When you ask that question, you find out, well, it's coming from China and Russia. All these arms and weapons that are killing our soldiers are coming from our new allies, China and Russia. And as Dr. Monteith constantly asks the question, how else can you explain this? Why would we be supplying our own enemies? Why would we be giving the weapons to our enemies to kill our own soldiers? Unless there's a bigger plan, if there's a secret plan that this all has a purpose for. She even talks about killing off people of lower grade. She says, very low-grade human bodies will disappear, causing a general shift in racial types toward a higher standard. Now, if I said that, or if you said that, you would be on the television more than Mel Gibson. You would never get away with making such an incredible statement that inferior races would be wiped out and replaced with a superior person. Yet she can say that. And in the United Nations, they have a place to worship. And they have the Lucis Foundation, which is the Lucifer Foundation. They have the Lucifer Publishing Company, which publishes all of her works. All of her books are published by the Lucis Publishing Company, which is the Lucifer Publishing Company. And yet people just sort of either ignore it, or they don't know about it, or if they do, they don't understand the importance of it, what it means. But these are the kind of things people need to know about, and I really would encourage your listeners to get a copy of the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Renee Wormser, because it shows how in America we have the fulfillment of Adam Westhoff's dream, and it's through the tax-free foundations that they're able to do that. These people through their granting power, have enormous influence for public opinion, what is taught, what is learned. Even medical journals are controlled by them. You know, I'm always talking about how certain medical discoveries are suppressed, or you can't get the story on the vaccine. Even studies can't be done, for instance, on mercury toxicity, mercury and vaccine. 70 years it was in use, and there was hardly two or three studies in any way related to the type of mercury that's in the vaccine. Well, that was done on purpose. And even after it was disclosed, they still won't fund research. Now, why would these giant foundations with unlimited resources not fund a study to find out whether the mercury in vaccines is toxic? It doesn't make sense unless you see the big picture. But as you read his book, he'll explain a lot of this, how these foundations interlock, how they all have the same goal, how they're all moving toward the same idea of destroying America's sovereignty, of creating a one-world government with U.N. leadership and a world court and the loss of the constitutional protections we have and the Bill of Rights. If people don't realize, in a world court, there's no Bill of Rights. There's no appealing to your Constitution. Your lawyer is useless because your lawyer doesn't know how to argue in a world court. You don't have the protections you have in the United States. Yet we have a government and a president, a series of presidents, who have been working tirelessly to destroy our nation's sovereignty right under your nose. And what's so scary is that it used to be, when I was growing up and Dr. Monteith was growing up, they kept all of this very, very secret. And if you said anything, they denied it. Now they don't even deny it. And they're telling the things that used to be secret. So many of these things that are revelations now are spoken of in newspapers and magazines, when I was in college, that was kept absolutely secret. And they said there was no such thing. So, you know, in just that short span of time, we've seen all of these things come about: the feminist revolution, the homosexual revolution, the destruction of the churches, the change in American sovereignty, the erosion of the Constitution, the changes in our judicial system. All of these things that were talked about when I was growing up, that people thought was a fanciful idea, now is right before our eyes. No one denies it, but yet people don't understand how it all came about. But it was written in 1776. Not only what was their goal, but exactly how they would do it, the methodology down almost to the last method in it. And yet we see it today. It's an application all around us.
Hold that thought for just a minute here. And, of course, our guest is Dr. Russ Blaylock. And really, I can remember, say, 10 years ago, you never saw mentioned in the mass media anything about the Council on Foreign Relations. Just until about 2 years ago, you never saw anything mentioned in the public media about the Bilderbergers, even though it had been around since, I think, 1954. Council on Foreign Relations has been around since 1921, but because their people control the mass media, you never really understood what it was really all about. But now they've come out of the closet. They're flaunting the fact that the Council on Foreign Relations has its people in key positions, has think tanks that are planning our future, the tremendous concentration of power. But, of course, the common denominator behind all of this is a dual desire. One, of course, is a world government under a ruling elite, and the other, of course, is the destruction of Christianity. And nobody will ever tell the American people why the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. That is very, very simple. Between 1941 and 1971, the Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court. Members of a secret society dedicated to the destruction of Christianity, which is what Masonry is, controlled the United States Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. Why doesn't anybody ever tell us that? Why? Because they control the media. Well, Dr. Blaylock, it's been a fascinating time, and we've just got a few minutes more. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners before we let you go?
Well, I would like to tell one last thing. If you look at history books, for instance, even the Fire and Minds of Men, he tells you that once Adam Westhoff was arrested and his papers were taken, that the Illuminati organization collapsed and it really had no influence after that time. Actually, Adam Westhoff even told how to make people think this. When he was exiled, he had a pension, and he said, convince people that we no longer exist, and secretly we will continue on the course that I've outlined. And so he engineered the very idea that this Illuminati organization had disappeared and had no more influence. That was part of his very plan. So you'll see that in the history books, and don't be fooled by it.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back just a moment to wrap up the program here with Russell Blaylock. But we know the Illuminati came here because a citizen's name. We have the handwritten letter that he wrote to Thomas Jefferson saying, you actually indoctrinated me in the mysteries. Why have you turned against me? We know that the Illuminati was here because we got material from Well, Russell, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, basically what I did, I reviewed a book that I think was very important because this is a witness of the French Revolution. This is a person who had historical education, knew how to get into these organizations. He was actually even invited into the Masonic Order. He saw it from the inside. He reported it. He read the papers of Adam Westhoff in great detail. So it's all there for you to read, and it's undeniable. And if we look at the examples of what happened after he wrote all of these things, the methodology and the plan has been unaltered, except in minor degrees, to this very day. And it's the way that they continue to maintain their control.
And, of course, there's really the Abbey Burrell. There's a Professor Robinson's book on proofs of a conspiracy. And then, of course, I agree that Fire in the Minds of Men is a very important book, as is Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and probably Tragedy and Hope, a History of the World in Our Time. And if you read those books, you really understand that there really are secret societies. They're working at every level of government. They interlock. They all have their separate organizations, but they all certainly have a common goal, and that is a one-world government and the destruction of Christianity. And when you understand that, you can understand what motivates them from century to century, because this has gone on for a long time. It was here even before the time of the Illuminati. The Illuminati was a continuation of the teachings of the ancient mysteries, and they are being, of course, continued to be taught today. Well, Russell, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. I know it's been sort of a marathon, but I really wanted our listeners to have a chance to hear the story all at one time, and I hope many of them will be stimulated to go out and get Abbe Burrell's book. Is it still available?
Oh, yes. Yes, you can probably get it through Amazon. I think it's available there. But you can find it in several places.
All right. Well, and what's the title again?
The title is Memoirs Illustrating the History of Jacobinism.
And, of course, the Jacobins were really, of course, a manifestation. They were sort of a front group for the Illuminati, weren't they?
Right. I mean, they just used them to implement the revolution. But once the revolution was over, they killed them off. So, you know, this is just exactly how the communists worked in the Soviet Union and in Cuba and every revolution. They kill off the actual people who do the mechanics of the revolution because they're dangerous. They don't want them anymore.
And, of course, the world revolution is continuing to this very day. And, of course, will continue at least until they are defeated or until they're victorious. Good night, Russell. God bless you. Thanks
so
much.
God bless you, and thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that many of you out there will want to get to this material. Basically, we do carry the book, Proofs of a Conspiracy, written by Dr. Robinson, Professor Robinson, who lived at the time of the Illuminati, was actually asked to join the movement, got to see its papers, and we do not carry Abbe Burrell's book, but we can perhaps help you get it. We carry the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. Fire in the Minds of Men by James H. Billington, a librarian of Congress who, of course, in his book, writes that this influence didn't come to America. And, of course, the influence did come to America. In fact, we even got from Dr. Billington's office, with the help of his secretary, a treatise on the Clintonian Illuminati written in 1803. So there's been much written about the Illuminati, and certainly Albert Pike in his book, Morals and Dogma, even writes about how the Illuminati was simply a continuum of the ancient mysteries and the Templars and the Rosicrucians and the writings of the Kabbalah, all together, of course, in this bringing you into the highest rites of modern-day Masonry. That's what it's really all about. It's about bringing a one-world government. It's about acquiring power, and you do that by tapping into the supernatural. You tap into the power that's available through the mediums and through the astrologers and through the fortune tellers and, yes, through the demons. But you do so at the risk of your eternal soul. If you'd like, of course, to get the information we're talking about, the book Proofs of a Conspiracy, Fire in the Minds of Men by James H. Bellington. If you want to get that treatise, we actually have that available through Radio Liberty. It's called The Clintonian Illuminati, written in 1803. And then, of course, the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. This permeates every aspect of our society today. Why do you think they wanted to get God and prayer out of our schools? There is no wall of separation between church and state. It's they wanted to destroy the religious faith of our children. Why do you think that they don't want to teach creation in our schools along with evolution? Very simply, they want to destroy the faith of our children. Why do you think they've infiltrated the Protestant seminaries and the Catholic seminaries? Because they want to destroy the faith of the young men who would lead the worship of God and discredit them and ultimately discredit Christianity. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, and most people don't even know a battle is going on. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And certainly our website is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. If you'd like to get to something specifically on the subjects we've been talking about, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, gives you an overview. Our three pamphlet set on the occult hierarchy. That's the occult hierarchy as a summary of the various newsletters I've written on this subject, and the newsletters have been written by Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who's certainly one of the world's leading experts on all of this and a great source of information and for me. And, of course, three pamphlets. They're economical, they're rather inexpensive. But certainly they're a very handy thing to have. That's the occult hierarchy, and you're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have, of course, all sorts of material on thought control. You want to know how the media is controlled? The book by Professor Ben Bagdakian called The New Media Monopoly points out that five mega corporations control 90 to 95% of the media in America, and ultimately determine what the vast majority of the American people think. And then, of course, we hope that you'll go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. You notice we do have a few things there we offer to raise the funds so we can continue speaking out 5 hours every working day, every weekday across America. And, of course, please remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, and our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
paying attention. There are many men who see the big lie.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating from the void of Yah's creation. It is Tuesday, the 8th of August, 2006, and I got a big smile on my face this morning because, yeah, there are a whole lot of people. We've been saying it for several years now. We all know where our line in the sand is, and guess what? The powers that be, the media moguls, and the media manipulators all see it, too. They just don't want to. With all the polls that are coming out, we have them shaking in their boots. This is Dave.
And Joyce, and I do agree with you on that one. And they're looking weaker and weaker. And, of course, this is being addressed directly.